Here to introduce our first reader is Valerie Vogren, author of the forthcoming novel Shebang, from which she read an excerpt at this very podium last month, and also professor of English and creative writing at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. Please welcome Valerie Vogren.
Thank you. Well, I think it's always special when a writer reads in her hometown, so I hope that Kathleen feels especially feted this evening. And as Richard alluded to, Kathleen is accustomed to honor, having received residencies at Hedgebrook and McDowell Colony and having been awarded a Whiting Award and a Guggenheim Fellowship. I was very excited to hear that Kathleen is going to be reading from new work tonight, because her first memoir, The Tender Land, is simply the best memoir I've ever read. And I say best memoir not to minimize her accomplishment, but to magnify it, because in the course of reading hundreds of published memoirs and many hundreds more as manuscripts as a teacher of memoir writing, I've come to believe it's the most difficult and treacherous genre. Memoir requires the writer to dwell in the past, ignoring the urge to run from it, ignoring the insistence of our popular culture in the cause of emotional hygiene, to move on, to get over it. Memoir requires the writer to engage in a months-long, years-long, unflinching investigation of her experience while somehow not getting bogged down in the thick, heavy mud of self. And there are many traps like this, which the memoirist is particularly vulnerable to, such as sentimentality and humorlessness. Memoir requires the writer to rely on memory, which we know is a recalcitrant and untrustworthy tool. Memoir requires the writer to give shape what utterly resists shaping, the lumpy, baggy, discontinuous, contradictory bag of chaos that contains every one of our days. The rare memoirist who does all of these things bestows us a gift, which is the gift we are about to receive. If past work presages, it will be a gift of honesty and authenticity, chock full of gorgeous sentences and lustrous images and mercy and grace. So I'll get out of the way and let Kathleen read. Please welcome Kathleen Finneran.
Thanks, Valerie. I had the pleasure of reading an advanced copy of Valerie's novel over the weekend, and I urge you to go out and buy it the minute it is at Left Bank Books on March 12th. It's called Shebang. The name's Valerie Vogren, in case you missed it, and you'll absolutely love it. That was a wonderful introduction. I think this piece that I'm reading will be as full as the honesty and authenticity that The Tender Land was. It might not be as chock full of great writing yet, because I just wrote it this weekend. And it's kind of a first draft, so you'll notice that there's a real lack of proportion when I go off in riffs on stuff, which I tend to do a lot in my writing. But this piece is, I'm just scanning the room to make sure there's no one in my family here. Because the only reason I'm reading this is because I suspect that there are none of them here. Not that there's anything like I wouldn't want them to hear, but I like them to experience things before I do them in public. Anyway, is anybody in my family here that I don't see? Nobody's copying to it. Well, I'll just plunge in and take the risk. I wanted to say, because there are so many wonderful writers in the room, that I have been really, really fortunate in terms of winning awards. But this past year and a half, of which is the first time in my life that I had the pleasure of being able to write full time, has been truly horrific for me as a writer. Just bad, 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 bad writing, consistently, day in and day out, every day. And I just kept thinking, if I keep showing up, someday it'll show up, and I hope it'll show up before the money runs out. So, it finally showed up in the last couple of weeks, and this piece is very new. It's from a book I'm working on about being an aunt, A-U-N-T. I can't say aunt to make that clear because that's not what I was brought up with and it sounds strange to me. So this will occupy some part of that final book, or it won't, but here it is for now. At the same time that my 15-month-old nephew Tommy is learning to say bye-bye, my 22-year-old niece Sarah is preparing to leave on a trip that none of us want her to take. When she calls me one morning to ask if I have any luggage she can borrow, I am torn in the way we have all been torn over the recent turn her life has taken. If I say yes, I am in some way saying that I support her decision to do what she is doing, and I don't. If I say no, I risk closing the few lines of communication that remain open between us, rejecting her by refusing what would otherwise be a small request. A few suitcases, a couple of canvas bags to carry her clothes to Los Angeles and back if she comes back. And that is my worry, that she won't be returning. As it is my sister Mary's, her mother's worry, as it is everyone else in the family's worry. We are what people consider a relatively close clan, and one person's concerns inevitably and easily become another's. I say yes. Yes, I have luggage, lots of it, in fact. I have the suitcase my parents bought me for Christmas my junior year in high school, so that, as my mother said, I could travel in style to Washington, D.C., where I was to represent my school at a week-long symposium for high school students interested in studying government. I wasn't interested in studying government. I just wanted to go somewhere. I was 17, and aside from one family vacation to the Smoky Mountains when I was 6, I had never been beyond Missouri or the nearer reaches of its bordering states. I just wanted to go somewhere, anywhere. I was good at faking my interest in anything and smart enough back then to pass scrutiny on quite a number of subjects that, in truth, I knew relatively little about. And so I was tapped to go to Washington, chosen over several other students whose interest in studying government was, I think, sincere. The principal of the high school arranged for the Florissant Rotary Club to pay the travel and program fees that my family couldn't afford. My parents were proud and excited. Their pride, of course, had something to do with the scholastic promise they saw in me. But bigger than that, more palpable, was the excitement of seeing one of us go somewhere. I don't mean that metaphorically, except for the Smoky Mountains, where each of us kids managed to get sick in succession. None of us had ever been anywhere. No one in my family, not even my parents, had ever flown on a plane. I was the first. In anticipation of the trip, my parents presented me with a suitcase they purchased at a discount store that's since closed. It was the mid-70s, and soft-sided luggage was just making its way into the marketplace. My father was against it. He argued for something sensible, durable, impenetrable. Something hard, damn it, I could imagine him saying to my mother as they stood arguing in the aisle. Actually, I don't imagine him saying that so much as I remember my younger brother Sean saying it. He reenacted the scene for us all shortly after I unwrapped the suitcase on Christmas. He had been there when they bought it. As she does with most purchases, my mother prevailed. I was the recipient of the latest in luggage, a soft-sided suitcase. Back then, soft-sided luggage was not the sleek stuff it is now. Its material was akin to the thickness and texture of elephant skin. My personal piece of pachyderm was pale blue, powder blue to be precise. That's what my mother called it. When she said she hoped I liked the color, the only other choice she said was tan, which of course I would have preferred. But tan is not a color my mother would ever have considered. Tan is neutral, and there is nothing about my mother that is neutral. Whenever possible, she prefers to stand out. Thank God I'm a winter, she would tell me years later when color analysis by season came into fashion, confirming the fact that she had been right all along about wearing bold colors, flaunting fuchsias and purples and reds. It was not just that my mother always chose color over the lack of it. There was another factor that came to the fore when she picked out clothes or any kind of accessories or accompaniments, say luggage, for herself or her children. Nonconformity. This was the thing that plagued us the most, that kept us ill at ease through all our growing up years, though my mother was never aware that she was causing us to cringe with self-consciousness on a regular basis. Rather, in her estimation, she ran herself ragged to make sure we had what everyone else had, procuring, for example, peacoats for my sister Mary and me at a price she could afford when that's what all the girls in junior high were wearing. Mary's was Kelly green. Mine was bright gold. Any more gold and it could only have been described as lamé. She could have gotten us navy, she would say, clearly delirious over the colors she had found. Sure, she could have gotten us navy, she said, as we tried on the coats, but everyone has navy. She failed always to realize that that was the point. And although she always offered us an out, if you don't like it, if you'd rather have the other, we can return it, she would say. None of us, with the exception years later of my younger sister Kelly, born late in my mother's life and willing to confront her at every turn, with the exception of Kelly, none of us ever had what it took to do it. For we knew from early experience that doing so would send her into the kind of tailspin that would leave her, if not depressed, then conspicuously subdued for days. And for us, wearing the wrong color, no matter how much ridicule from our classmates came with it, was nothing compared to enduring my mother's protracted silence and pain. And so I received a piece of powder blue luggage, one that lived up to both the powder and blue parts of its name. It had flecks of white all over it, as if, as an afterthought, the fabric's manufacturer had spritzed it with the kind of fake snow that people once applied to their Christmas trees and picture windows, artfully spraying the tips of the branches and panes of glass with white flocking that hissed out of an aerosol can. After I unwrapped the suitcase, after Sean finished his reenactment of the argument my parents had in the store, in the now defunct discount store, after I exclaimed my excitement and said the suitcase was perfect, after my mother said that they had it in tan too if I'd rather, and after I dutifully dismissed that option, saying the blue I'm sure was better, after Christmas was over and several weeks had gone by, I went to Washington, D.C. with my soft-sided suitcase, studied government up close for a week, and came home. Had I known that I would receive a second soft-sided powder blue suitcase the next year, and the next year, and the year after that, until I had received the full four-piece set, certainly I would have summoned the strength to exchange it for the tan. But I could not see a future. And it was my further misfortune that Sean had been the only one of my siblings who had accompanied my parents to the store that day, for they had bought all of the luggage right then and there, parceling it out over 4 years, gifting me over time with the whole set, having glimpsed in me the promise that I might be going places. It sealed my fate that Sean had been the only witness to the purchase. Any of my other siblings would have alerted me to what was coming. Traded in for tan, they would have warned me. There's more of this stuff on its way. But Sean was solemn when it came to secrets. As far as he was concerned, God bless him, secrets got carried to the grave. So yes, I told my niece Sarah I had luggage. And yes, against my better judgment about where she was going and what she was doing, I told her she could borrow it. And as I waited for her to come over that morning, I wondered, whatever happened to that powder blue set of soft-sided luggage my parents had given me almost 30 years earlier? They had been right. I had gone places. Not to as many places as they might have envisioned, but to a few places nonetheless. And the beauty of cheap luggage is that it doesn't last. Still, I don't recall its final demise. Could it have, in the end, been sold off in one of the family garage sales, showing its age but still functional, still worth a dollar or two? Probably. Probably that's what happened to it. Awaiting Sarah's arrival, I pulled down my newer set of luggage from the top shelf of the closet and smiled at the memory of my brother Michael's description of the powder blue set. You know, he said, it's sort of the suitcase equivalent of a pastel polyester leisure suit. And he was right, it was a true product of the 70s, just as my newer luggage was a true product of the 90s, with all the practical features required of any product that gets manufactured today. It's sleek, slimlined, yet capable of carrying much more than its looks would let on, like a bird that eats 10 times its weight every day. Or is it 2 times? I can never remember that stuff. Whereas the powder blue set was the luggage of my youth, here is the luggage of my middle age. Each piece purchased over a 4-year period at the Macy's Labor Day sale. The only way I could afford it. Purchased, I want to make this point, at the real Macy's, the original Macy's, the one on Herald Square, the parade Macy's, across from my office during the years I lived in New York City, one of the places I had gotten to. I loved this luggage. It was dark and understated, its zippers tastefully concealed, such that at first glance, it looked as if there were no entry points into it. How do you open this? Was the first thing Sarah asked when she saw it. Indeed, I said, hoping she would appreciate its fine points as much as I did. I got the keys out and showed her where to locate the zippers. Though it looked as if there were none, in fact, there were many, foot lengths and foot lengths of zippers, astonishing in length, I'm sure, if they were ever to be laid out end to end, astonishing, like the length of human intestine or the miles and miles of blood vessels we have in our bodies. All the way to Los Angeles and back again, I thought, if you laid all these zippers out end to end, to Los Angeles and back again, if she comes back again. You know, I said, borrowing this luggage means for sure you have to come home. And then I told her that in 3 weeks I had to go back to New York for you for a few days. She'd be home by then, right? I'd need the luggage back. I was lying, and I wondered if she knew that. I wondered if she knew I was lying. In the end, she wouldn't come back in time to return the luggage for the trip to New York that I wasn't really taking. She would call collect from Los Angeles and apologize. She really hadn't intended to stay for longer than 3 weeks, and then whatever excuses were to come would come. But that was later. That day, the day she borrowed my luggage, I demonstrated all of its features to her, and I resisted the urge to slip into one of the suitcases, a column I had cut out of the paper a few days earlier that listed and explained in detail the 15 warning signs of an abusive partner as developed by the Project for Victims of Family Violence. I resisted the urge to leave it in the suitcase for her to find later, figuring in the end that she was probably incapable at that point of recognizing what was so obvious to the rest of us, that her boyfriend of the past 2 years, the one whom she was accompanying to Los Angeles, was a perfect match to 12 of the 15 points on the profile. Among other transgressions, he had, in less than 2 years' time, convinced her to drop out of college, sacrificing a full scholarship, got her to sever ties with all of her friends and most of her family, to quit her job as a clerk at a supermarket where she had made the mistake of letting a fellow employee flirt with her, and on, point by point, down the profile. There were explanations, of course. We had it all wrong, she said, if we could only see the good in him that she saw. So no, I held on to the column. I would confront her with it later, I reasoned, really try again, as we all had, to make her see what was happening. I watched her drive off with the luggage, and I was torn, as we had all been torn, and I know, too, that I would have to face my sister Mary's anger. Why are you lending her luggage? Why are you making it easier for her? questions I had no real answers to, except to say that being an aunt puts you in a different position than being a mother, a more precarious position sometimes, when you have to weigh your allegiance to your sisters over the trust you want to keep with your niece. That's what I'll tell Mary when she asks, and she will ask. And I'll tell her these words that I won't believe I'm saying to her, even as I hear myself saying them. You'll find out what it's like someday, I'll tell her, when you're the aunt of older children, when Stephanie, my younger sister Kelly's daughter, who's 10 now, grows up and puts you in a similar position, God forbid, one where you have to decide whether you'll be her confidant or Kelly's, you'll find out that it won't be so easy. I'll tell her, sounding exactly as she had when she used to tell me, you'll find out when you have kids of your own what it's like, until it was clear to both of us that that was not going to happen. And I will finish myself, I'm sorry, and I will find myself telling her all the sooner than I thought I would have to, for after Sarah leaves with my luggage that day, I drive over to Kelly's to babysit my 15-month-old nephew Tommy while Kelly goes to her weekly graduate school class. I am barely in the door when she delivers the message that Mary wants me to call her. And so I know already that the word is out about the luggage and that they, as mothers, have already discussed it between them. I pick up my nephew. Bye-bye, he says to me. Bye-bye, he repeats. Hi, Tommy, I say. Hi, I tell him again, trying to teach him the difference between coming and going. Hi, I smile at him. Hi, I say. Bye-bye, he says back, and I press him into my chest. Such a short, short time ago, I did the same to Sarah. Thank you.